Chapter 74. The Leaguer of Paris. By a singular coincidence, on the very same day when the armies of Henry V appeared before Paris from the western road, those of the Emperor John Thomas Napoleon arrived from the north. Skirmishes took place between the advanced guards of the two parties, and much slaughter ensued. Bon, thought King Louis-Philippe, who examined them from his tower, they will kill each other. This is by far the most economical way of getting rid of them. The astute monarch's calculations were admirably exposed by a clever remark of the Prince of Balibunian. "Ace, Harry," says he with a familiarity which the punctilious son of St. Louis resented, "you and him yanther the Emperor, I mean, are like the Kilkenny cats, dear. Et que fan il ses chats de Kilkenny, Monsieur le Prince de Balibunian?" asked the most Christian king haughtily. Prince Daniel replied by narrating the well-known apologue of the animals ting each other all up but their teals, "and that's what you and imperial papianther will do, blazing away as ye are," added the jocus and royal boy. "G privater altesse royale de vagere ses propers affairs," answered Prince Henry sternly, for he was an enemy to anything like a joke. But there is always wisdom in real wit, and it would have been well for his most Christian majesty had he followed the facetious counsels of his Irish ally. The fact is, the king, Henry, had an understanding with the garrisons of some of the forts, and expected all would declare for him. However, of the 24 forts which we have described, 8 only, and by the means of Marshal Soult, who had grown extremely devout of late years, declared for Henry, and raised the white flag. While 8 others, seeing Prince John Thomas Napoleon before them in the costume of his revered predecessor, at once flung open their gates to him, and mounted the tricolor with the eagle. The remaining 8, into which the princes of the blood of Orleans had thrown themselves, remained constant to Louis-Philippe. Nothing could induce that prince to quit the Tuileries. His money was there, and he swore he would remain by it. In vain his sons offered to bring him into one of the forts he would not stir without his treasure. They said they would transport it thither. But no, no. The patriarchal monarch, putting his finger to his aged nose, and winking archly, said he knew a trick worth 2 of that, and resolved to abide by his backs. The theaters and cafes remained open as usual. The funds rose 3 centimes. The Journal des Debats published 3 editions of different tones of politics. 1, the Journal de l'Empereur, for the Napoleonites. The Journal de la Legitimite another, very complimentary to the legitimate monarch. And finally, the original edition, bound heart and soul to the dynasty of July. The poor editor, who had to write all 3, complained not a little that his salary was not raised. But the truth is, that, by altering the names, one article did indifferently for either paper. The Duke of Brittany, under the title of Louis XVII, was always issuing manifestos from Charenton, but of these the Parisians took little heed. The Charivari proclaimed itself his gazette, and was allowed to be very witty at the expense of the 3 pretenders. As the country had been ravaged for 100 miles round, the respective princes of course were for throwing themselves into the forts, where there was plenty of provision. And, when once there, they speedily began to turn out such of the garrison as were disagreeable to them, or had an inconvenient appetite, or were of a doubtful fidelity. These poor fellows turned into the road, had no choice but starvation. As to getting into Paris, that was impossible. A mouse could not have got into the place, so admirably were the forts guarded, without having his head taken off by a cannonball. Thus the 3 conflicting parties stood, close to each other, hating each other, willing to wound, and yet afraid to strike the victuals in the forts, from the prodigious increase of the garrisons, getting smaller every day. As for Louis-Philippe in his palace, in the center of the 24 forts, knowing that a spark from one might set them all blazing away, and that he and his money bags might be blown into eternity in 10 minutes, you may fancy his situation was not very comfortable. But his safety lay in his treasure. Neither the imperialists nor the Bourbonites were willing to relinquish the 250 billions in gold, nor would the princes of Orleans dare to fire upon that considerable sum of money, and its possessor, their revered father. How was this state of things to end? The emperor sent a note to his most Christian majesty, for they always styled each other in this manner in their communications, proposing that they should turn out, and decide the quarrel sword in hand, to which proposition Henry would have acceded, but that the priests, his ghostly counselors, threatened to excommunicate him should he do so. Hence this simple way of settling the dispute was impossible. The presence of the Holy Fathers caused considerable annoyance in the forts. Especially the poor English, as Protestants, were subject to much petty persecution, to the no small anger of Jenkins, their commander. And it must be confessed that these intrepid footmen were not so amenable to discipline as they might have been. Remembering the usages of Merry England, they clubbed together, and swore they would have four meals of meat a day, wax candles in the casemates, and their porter. These demands were laughed at. The priests even called upon them to fast on Fridays, on which a general mutiny broke out in the regiment, and they would have had a fourth standard raised before Paris, viz. That of England. But the garrison proving too strong for them, they were compelled to lay down their sticks, and, in consideration of past services, were permitted to leave the forts. 'Twas well for them, as you shall hear. The Prince of Balibunian and the Irish force were quartered in the fort which, in compliment to them, was called Fort Piatto, and where they made themselves as comfortable as circumstances would admit. The princes had as much brandy as they liked, and passed their time on the ramparts playing at dice, or pitch and toss with the halfpenny that one of them somehow had, for vast sums of money, for which they gave their notes of hand. The warriors of their legion would stand round delighted, and it was, Musha, Master Dan, but that's a good throw. Good luck to you, Mr. Pat, and throw 13 this time, and so forth. But this sort of inaction could not last long. They had heard of the treasures amassed in the palace of the Tuileries. They sighed when they thought of the lack of bullion in their green and beautiful country. They panted for war. They formed their plan. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.